The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Good evening, everyone. This week's Parsha is Parshas Korach. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohath ben Levi. Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, took. Torah says he took, but it doesn't say what he took. Rashi goes into it. Vidosan Vaviram, Bnei Eliov, Vion ben Peles, Bnei Ruben. Vayakumul ifnei Moshe, Vanoshim ibnei Yisrael, Chamishim u'Masoim. And they went and they stood before Moshe, together with 250 Nisia Eidor, leaders of the congregation, Kri Maid Anshe Shem, people who were singled out by name, and were very, very distinguished members of the congregation. Vayikolo al Moshe val Aaron vayimra alehem. They gathered up against Moshe and Aaron, and they said to them, Rav lachem, ki kol eido kulam kadeshim abeseichem Hashem. You have so much. Why have you taken so much? All of the congregation is sanctified. And all of them were heard the giving of the Torah on Har Sinai. And why have you elevated yourselves above the congregation of Hashem? What was their bone of contention? Because Moshe became the Melech, the king, and his brother Aaron became the Kohen Gadol. You're taking all the honors for yourself. Vayishma Moshe vayipol al ponov. Moshe heard this, and he fell on his face like in exasperation. Vaydaber al kolach ve'al kol ados lemor boker v'yoda. So he said to Korach and his community, his congregation, wait till tomorrow, and then Hashem will single out. You're coming, well, what did they want? They wanted the kohuna. They wanted the priesthood in the kohuna gedola, to become the high priest. Tomorrow, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come, and he will choose who should be the high priest. Say Sasu, this is what you should do in the meantime. Kehulachem machtes. Take for yourselves. There were certain vessels, utensils, that these utensils were used to put incense and coals and fires in them. And they would be brought to the Mizbeach, to the altar. So he told them, all of you, Kerach v'chol adosei, all of you, 250 men and you should take these utensils, snu v'hein eish, simale and ketores, put fire in them, put incense, and be ready for tomorrow, because only the Kohanim would do this. And Hashem will choose tomorrow who he wants to receive this from. Rav lachem b'nei Levi, and he warned them. They were also from Levim. He warned them that what you're doing to revolt against the kohuna, the high priesthood which I have given to Aaron and ultimately to his children, is something very, very heavy. They were from Levi, so they were Levim. He says, you have been given honors. All of the Levim were separated to serve in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary, and to serve in the Beis HaMikdosh, not like the Kahanim, but Levim. And now you want Kahuna also. We'll see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do. Then it states, Vayishlach Moshe Likrei Ledosan Laviram Ben Eliov. That evening Moshe sent for Dosan Vaviram. Vayemru Naale. Moshe wanted to see if he could calm them down, cool them down. There was a revolution here. They wouldn't come. They said, "Hamat Ali sonu me'erizov aschol avodvash la'misena b'midbor." Not only you haven't brought us to the land of milk and honey that you promised us, but we're going to die in the desert. Kis istorer aleinu gam istorer. Also, we will allow you to elevate yourself and your family and take all the honors for yourself from Klal Yisrael. And they insulted Moshe. Vayichal Moshe me'od. Moshe became very angry. Then he told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "What are they? I never took anything from them. Not only one donkey. I didn't even ask for a donkey to use when I came from Midian to Egypt to take them out of Mitzrayim. And now they're coming to revolt against me." Next morning, they were there, and Hashem told Moshe Va'ara, and he bodl mitecha edazos. Separate yourself from this group. It's dangerous. Va'achala isam karoga. Now, first Hashem said, separate yourself from all of Klal Yisrael, and I will destroy all of them. And then Moshe said, no. He said, Elakei Arucha Isa. One man is chayta, sins, and you'll take it out on everyone. So then he said, go away from the group. Kerach, Dosan, Baviram, and all of their families. So Moshe told all of the people that were not involved, separate yourself from them, because it's going to become very dangerous. And meanwhile, they stood very defiantly. Dosan and Aviram, and Korach, and their wives, and their sons, and the infants. And Hashem said, "Bizos teidun ki Hashem shalachani lasis kol ha'maisim ha'ela." Moshe said, "You will know that Hashem has instructed me who to make king and who to make the king godel. And lemi libi, I didn't do this out of my own heart. And how will you know? Im kemes kol odom yamusun ela. If these people will die, like everyone else dies." Then lay Hashem shalachoni. Then Hashem has not sent me. Vimbriya yivra Hashem. But if a new creation will come about, or something that has never been shown in the world before, ufotzoso hadom espiho, and the earth will open its mouth, uvala esom, and swallow them up, v'skol asher lahem, and everyone that is with them, v'yodu chaim sha'ola, and they will go down to their graves alive, then you will know that these people are not revolting against me, they're revolting against Hashem. And as Moshe finished speaking, the earth opened up, cracked beneath them, and swallowed them up in all their houses, and everyone that was with his congregation, his kol erechush, and they all went down chayim she'ola, alive to their graves, but chasaleim ha'oretz, and then the earth covered by yovdu mitech alcohol, and they had disappeared. And it cast an enormous fright through the whole nation. The Eishotzes Ameis Hashem. And then a fire came. Vatochal Eisach Hamishim Omasayim Ish. And the 250 that were with him, fire came and burnt their incense, but together with them. A little further, the Torah tells us that later on, the congregation started to complain against Moshe and Aaron. He said, "You are causing the death of all of the nation of Hashem." And they started the whole business. And again Hashem said, that I'm going to come and destroy the nation. And he brought a magefa. He brought a whole plague. And Aaron stopped the plague, but only after 14,700 were killed. Because of Dvar Kerach, because of this whole episode of Korach, Va'adosai and his group. This is the story in its simplicity. Let's go into this a little deeper. Firstly, what did Korach want? What was his motive? And what were the motives of the other people? Every act must have a motive if it's done intentionally. Rashi brings from the Chazal that Levi, one of the sons of Yaakov, one of the 12 sons, he had 3 sons, Gershon, Kohos, and Merari. Kohos had 4 sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. Moshe and Aaron were the sons of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. They were the children of Amram, the oldest son of Kohos. Korach, as it states here, Vayika Korach ben Yitzhar, ben Kohos, he was the son of the second oldest, Yitzhar. He became very inflamed because Moshe and Aaron, who were the children of Amram, the oldest son, took the 2 greatest honors. Moshe became the king, and Aaron became the Kohen Gadol. And from the children of Aaron would go out Kohanim. Moshe didn't do this on his own. This is what Hashem instructed him to do. Now when it came to choosing a Nosi, a prince, for the household of Kohos, which was their grandfather, Korach held that it should be him, because he's the son of the second son of Kohos, of Yitzhar. Instead, the one that was chosen, which was also Al Pi Hashem from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was Elitzofan ben Uziel. Uziel was the youngest son from the 4 sons of Kohos. Korach was the son of the next to the oldest of Kohos, and the one that was chosen as the Nosi was Elitzofan, which was the son of the youngest son of Kohos, who was his cousin, but a much younger, from a younger brother. This inflamed him. He became very, very jealous. So he said he's going to do something about it. His plan was to revolt. Hareini chelek olav mevatel es devarav. I will come and I'll make a revolution. Now he couldn't just pinpoint this, because then people see that he's only involved because of his personal interest. So he will come and with the propaganda. He will tell the people, look, they're taking everything away. They're taking everything for themselves. They're not giving the Kahal Yisrael anything. This is what he said. He said, Madua tishnasu al Kahal Hashem. Kulam kedoshim v'maseichem Hashem. He didn't say, why are you taking this from me? This is the general way that someone, if someone's going to come to make machlekes and revolt, so firstly, he has to get his foot soldiers together with him. And he has to convince them. Why should they come and stick their necks out because of him? See, what he told them, that I'm not doing this because of myself, I'm doing this because of you. They've taken everything from you. Kulam kedeshi b'sei Hashem. You all were on Har Sinai, you're all the Am Hashem. Come up and stand and fight. This was his motive, and this is what he did. So he came to challenge Moshe Rabbeinu's authority in taking the Malchus, but Be'ikar in giving the Kohuna to Aaron. He wanted to take it away from him. Then we notice that states, who did he gather first? Dosan and Aviram. This also is the ways of the Balei Machlekes, of those who want to challenge authority or want to make a revolt. They go to the rabble-rousers. Dosan and Aviram were rabble-rousers from a long time ago. They were the two in Egypt yet that went to Parai and told Parai that Moshe killed an Egyptian. And that's why Moshe had to run away to Midian. Parai wanted to kill him, tried to kill him. And they were the ones that constantly were a thorn to Moshe and Aaron in the desert. They were troublemakers for a long time. So when you want to make an uprise, you go to troublemakers who have, at any rate, an axe to grind. They went to Dosan Baviram. Then it states they went Vayakum Livnei Moshe v'Anoshim, and they got 250 people together with them, lining up the soldiers, their camp. Who were these 250? It states Nesi Edo, leaders of the congregation. Kriya Imoed Anshei Shem, men of distinction, men of name. Who were they? Rashi tells us there were 250 Roshei Sanhedrios, 250 heads of Sanhedrin. He understood he's not going to overthrow Moshe so easily. Not just with rabble-rousers. They're good to have. But he's going to need some people of distinction. He's going to need some heavyweights. So he went and he got 250 heads of courts. This is why it states, Kri Meir Anshe Shem. And how did he get them? He must have been a very convincing advocate, arguer. He put down the case. He says, these two are running away with the whole show. They're corrupt. They're thieves. We can't sit silently by and do nothing. And there's no doubt that the 250, they thought that this is a machlekes l'shem shemayim. Because you're not going to get 250 leaders of the congregation, kriye mod, people that were known and distinguished, anshe shem, men of good names, that were the head of courts, to come and do something that's illegal. called me, Shabiyoda Limchais Veina Meicha. Told them, it's in our power to do something. If we don't, then we are guilty. We must stand up against this. This is what he did. Then it states B'nai Ruvain. On Ben Peles, B'nai Ruvain. Rashi tells us almost all of them were from the Shevet Ruvain. Almost all of them. He says, why? Why from the Shevet Ruvain? Ruvain was not any worse than anybody else. Oy Leroshah, Oy Leshchenov. Because Reuben's camp was right next to Levi's camp. And association is good if you associate with good people. But there can be nothing worse if you associate with bad people. Because they and Reuben, their camps were so close together, the Ay Rashi says brings, he says, Bishvil she yeshevet Reuben shori bechaniosom teimono. Their camps were right near these camps. Shochin lekos abonav achenim teimono, which was on the south side, nishtatfu. They became shutfin in this. Ay lerosha v'ay lishchinov. From here, the Chazal teach us, never be in close proximity to Rishoyim, especially to Balei Loshon Hara and Balei Machlekes, because they will suck you into it. Rather, be in close proximity to good people, and then you'll be drawn into what they're doing. Then we learned, it states, Vayipol Alponov. When they came to Moshe with this, Moshe fell down. Vayishma Moshe, Vayipol Alponov. Possum Dalit. Why did Moshe fall? Rashi tells us, he said, how many times can I go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ask him to forgive you? This is the fourth uprise. The first one was the Chet HaEgel, the golden calf. I had to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to appeal for you, on your behalf. The next one was the Mis'ainanim, the complainers in the desert. I had to go to him. The next one was the Maraglim, in last week's parsha. I had to go to appeal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu again on your behalf. He wanted to destroy all of you. And now this one, Kerah. How many times? From here, we learn when this took place. This took place after the Maraglim. There's actually a dispute in this. Because, logically, it should have took place before. Why? Because the appointments of the Nesim, of the leaders of all of the household, was before when they would meet Bar Sinai, when they were in the desert of Sinai, that year that they spent there, after the giving of the Torah. The Mishkan was constructed, and all of the Nesim and all of the heads of households were appointed. So that's when he should have stood up. The Maraglim came after that, when they were already went on the borders of Eretz Yisrael. They were on the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and they were ready to go in. Because of that, I was shown by, I forgot who, I think my son, Reb David, that the Ibn Ezra learns that really this took place before. Why does it bring it after Parsha Shalach? It's out of order. We have many times that there are Parshas that are out of chronological order. But the Ramban and others, and that's how Rashi's learning here, claim no, it took place afterwards. Like the order it is in the Sefer Torah. Now there's the question, and so why did he wait? Also we see, it states almost explicitly, it states, because one of the psukim we read in Pasuk Yud Gimel was that Dosen and Aviram told Mesha, when he called them to come to him, Amat ki elishonim eres ovas cholav odvash la misenu bamidbar. Af le al eres ovas cholav odvash. You haven't even brought us to, you haven't kept your promise to bring us to a land of milk and honey. Instead, we're dying in the desert. It seems that it was taking place after the Meraglim, after the spies, after the decree. Now the question is, why didn't he revolt right away? So we see also the strategy here. When people want to challenge, they want to make a revolution, they wait for the right time. Timing is important. The right hour. Moshe's strength was too much before. They felt they would never have a chance. They had received the Torah, had the Mon, they were in Har Sinai, they were celebrating for a year the Simchas HaTorah, they put up the Mishkan, they won't have a chance to knock him over. But now that there was a decree that the whole nation will die in the desert, and only the young people will enter into the land. Now there was a lot of unrest in the camp. And a lot of unrest in the camp and a lot of bad sentiment. They saw this is their hour. They'll challenge and stand up against Moshe. Now, actually, even at that time, to stand up against Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron would not be something easy. Even at that time. Moshe had managed to take care of Pare. He managed to take care of all of Egypt. He managed to take care of the Yamsuf, the Red Sea. He brought down the Mon. He went up on Har Sinai. And he was there for 40 days and 40 nights. Three times. He stood up against the whole nation when they worshipped the golden calf. And every time there was trouble, Moshe took care of it. Did Korach really think? And Korach was not, he was not a tibish. Did he really think that he could overthrow Moshe Rabbeinu? Even at this time? So there must have been more. There was. Firstly, he had a lot of blue blood in him. The most distinguished son of Yaakov Avinu was Levi. Already in Egypt we find that all of the tribes were enslaved except Levi. That's why Moshe and Aaron were able to come and go freely. And why was that? Because Yaakov Avinu had already seen the greatness of Levi, and he already separated Levi and commanded the children that Levi always should be separated to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You should see that they're able to sit and to study the Torah and to teach the Torah. He was from Levi. So what it states, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi. Secondly, the most distinguished son of Levi was Kohos. Kohos, all of the Levim were given duties in regards to the sanctuary. When the Nesim, the princes came of each tribe to donate to the coronation of the sanctuary, they brought as a gift wagons and oxen. It states, this was in Parshas Nasoh just the other week. So it states that Moshe gave all of the wagons and the oxen to all of the Levim, but not to the sons of Kohath. Because what they had to carry from the Mishkan was ala kosef yisol. They had to carry on their shoulders, not by wagons. They were given the duty to carry the most honored and sanctified utensils and vessels and objects of the Mishkan. The Aron HaKodesh, the Menorah, the Shulchan, and so forth. So Kohath was the most distinguished son of Levi, that was the most distinguished son of Yaakov Avinu. And Yitzhar was the eldest son in this lineage, in the next generation, next to Amram, who was the father of Moshe. That's why he was able to think that he could equal Moshe and Aaron. He's coming from an ancestry like theirs. And he was of blue blood. That was one thing. Second thing, money came into it. He was an Osher Muflig. He was enormously wealthy. I don't know exactly how, but the sages tell us that somehow he managed to tap the Eitzrei Shel Yosef, the treasure houses of Yosef. Yosef had gathered in the wealth of the entire world during the time of famine, when they sold the grain from Egypt, and he stored this all in the treasure houses of Paray. When Klal Yisrael went out, somehow Korach managed to tap it. And he went out with enormous wealth. I forgot the exact amount, but there's a medrash that states that he needed maybe 100 or 200 donkeys just to carry the heavy keys of all the great chests that the treasures were stored in. So he was enormously wealthy, and money makes a person feel very powerful. V'rom levavecho, states, once a person has a lot of money, v'rom levavecho, becomes very, very arrogant and powerful. So he had that in his favor also. But then he had something else in his favor also that we learn. There was a Rav that once told me that one of the greatest misleading factors, something that can mislead a person to do the wrong things in this type of what we're talking about, is visions of grandeur. Chalemus. He had visions of grandeur. Where did he have it? Rashi brings it. In Pasuk Zayin, Rashi brings V'keirach shepikeach hoyo. Korach was a brilliant person. Ma roa lishtuse. Did he really think? Was he a shaita, a fool? Well, he thought he could overthrow Moshe and Aaron. Eine hita osoi. He had false visions of grandeur. Because, evidently, he had also some ruach hakodesh. He also had some prophecy. And he saw that would come from him a lineage that would be almost as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. And who was that? That was Shmuel Hanovi. A descendant of his would be Shmuel. The Torah tells us that Shmuel was almost equal to Moshe and Aaron. Also he foresaw Chof Dalet Mishmores Emdish Mimnei Bonav Kula Mishnabdim Beruach HaKodesh. 24 groups of his children would be serving in the Beis HaMikdosh as Levim, and they would all have Ruach HaKodesh. So he saw destiny was on his side. Must be that he would win this battle. He made a mistake though. What was the toast? Leiro Yofer. See, many that have visions of grandeur do not see too clearly. Lefishabonov osu tshuva. His children did tshuva. And this is why they were saved. So this is the background. Further, we see in Pasuk Ches, Vayemem Meshel Kerach Shimuna B'nei Levi, Moshe started to speak to Korach, and then he started to speak to all of the Levim. Rashi brings, first he started to speak Dvorim Rachim. If there's a machlekes, if there's a revolt, if there's a challenge, Moshe tried to cool it down. He didn't meet it head on. Dvorim Rachim. Let's be reasonable. Let's speak about this dialogue. But then, as he saw that they were not interested in listening, even Shirov, She'erif, then Moshe used another strategy which is very, very important for us to know. He called all of the Levim together. Achele Yishtatfu Shara Shvotim Ve'yovdu Imai Adaber El Kulam Hiske Lazarus Be'em Shimon Abenei Levi. Because he didn't want it to spread. Chofetz Chaim Zichrei Livracha always compares a machlekes to a fire. When there's a fire, heaven forbid, what is the first strategy that you should use? The first strategy firefighters use is to contain the fire. Contain it. When you have big fires, heaven forbid, in the forests, other such places, the first strategy is to make fire breaks. They would dig trenches or other such things that it shouldn't spread. Then try to put it out. Because if you don't do that, a fire will spread and spread. Europe, there used to be towns, they burnt the entire town to the ground if a fire got out of control. Chofetz Chaim says you should know that a machlekes is like a fire. First strategy, you must contain it. If two people are fighting, contain it to the two people. He says, he knows, he brings cases of shuls that became destroyed because two people had a machlekes. Because they start to bring in each one supporters. Networking. Now, in such a case, you should tell them, Jafar Ibel, I have nothing to do with this. They'll say, aren't you going to stand up for me? I'm sorry. If everyone would take that attitude, then it'll be a fight between two people. If they'll say, but you're going to just stand by, no, you have a fribble, you two go to the Rav and let him mediate. Go to the Beis Din and let him mediate. Instead, he says, people like Shaitim, one will take one side and another will take another side. Then they'll bring in more friends. Until before you know, the whole congregation and the whole shul has a machlekes and it splits into two shuls. And this we see all of the time. And whole communities split that way. Because they didn't realize a machlekes is a fire. Even before trying to put it out, you must see it's contained. Not to spread. This Moshe saw. When he started to speak to them, and he saw, no, she'erif, they're not going to listen. Then his first concern was, they're claiming that they're standing up for all of the Levim, because he gave it to Aaron, he should give it to the others. The Levim are the most vulnerable. It'll spread to all of the Levim if I don't do anything. So immediately, that's why it states, Vayome Meshe El Korach, and then Shimon Obenei Levi. He called all of the Levim to speak to them, to see that they don't get involved. This is very, very important things that we are learning. Next, in Posuk Yud Beis, Mayishlach Moshe Likrei Ledosin La'aviram B'nei Eliyov. Moshe sent to summon Dosin and Aviram. They said, we won't come. Why did he send? Rashi brings from the Chazal, the Gemara brings, Mikan she'ein machzikin b'machlekes. Even though Moshe had a machlekes on his hands, he had now managed to contain it. But even if you have a machlekes, you must go back and try to cool it down. Try to make peace. See, he called them to come. But they refused to come. They even cursed Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why he became so angry. Then it states in Posuk Yutes, Mayakal aleim Korach is called Edo el Pesach el Mei Moed. Korach gathered his whole group together by the Ohel Moed. What was he doing? He was gathering them all together. B'divrei Letzon is kol alayla. Holach etzel ha'shvotim u'pita eson. Again, we see what their strategy was. With Letzones, with scoffing, with mocking. That whole night he went one after the other. In other words, here he was networking. Here he was gathering his army together. And he went to all of the Shvatim, Upita, and he tried to entice them. He says, I'm not coming for my own sake. I'm not coming in my own interests. My interests are for you. They're coming, Heiluboin, Venaitlin Kolagdulas, they're taking what belongs to you. Leha Malchus, Ulaochi Vakuhuna. Moshe took the kingship. He gave his brother the priesthood until he gathered this big group together. Pasukhov Beis, it states, Moshe and Aaron fell to the ground when Hashem came, and they said, Kel Elekei Aruchais, God of all spirits, Lechol Bosar of all flesh, Isha Echad Yechetov Al Kol Eidah Yitikseif. One man sins and you want to destroy the whole nation. What does it mean, Kel Elekei Aruchais, God of all spirits, of all flesh? Why do they have to bring that in? Rashi brings as follows. He says, when there is a king who is of flesh and blood, of human being, and his people want to revolt against him, what does he do? He doesn't know who started it. He doesn't know who they are the instigators. He punishes them all. But you're a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You know who the instigator is. You know who the real guilty ones are. Why should you punish the whole nation? It's something also to learn. You see, people that start machlekes, they try to make a cover-up. But look, I'm not the one. Kodesh Baruch Hu knows. You can fool people, but not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, so we've gone through the Sipur, the story, and we've gone through it with some depth to find out what the background was. Excuse me. The punishment that was dealt out here is Yechidah. It's the only time we find this. History, the whole Torah. There should be this type of punishment. Let's go into a few points with further depth. The first pasuk states, "Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi Midosit ba'aviron b'nei Eliyov, ein ben Peles b'nei Reuven. And Korach took. There's two questions on that pasuk. It states he took, and it doesn't say what he took. He took, but it doesn't say what. Second question, it says Korach was the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohos, the son of Levi. Why doesn't it say that he was the son of Yaakov? Levi is the son of Yaakov. If you're relating his ancestry all the way back, because it, otherwise it would just say Vayikach Korach or Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar. So it goes back to Korach, Yitzhar, Kohos, Levi. Why do you stop at Levi? It should say Yaakov. The sages dwell on both of these questions. The simple meaning of Vayikach, Rashi brings in his Pirushini, he went to take henchmen, like we said. Someone wants to start a quarrel, a big quarrel. He wants to challenge authority and overthrow. He needs soldiers. See, he went to gather his soldiers, Vayikach. And how do you take a human being, an animal you can take physically, but how do you take a human being? With Dvorim. What's Dvorim? Propaganda. Loshon Hara. That's the simple meaning. But there's another meaning, Rashi says. And that's the Targum. Spalek. Who did he take? He took himself. Lokach es atzmoi. He took himself. L'tzarecho liyais nechalok mitecho edo. Le'era ala kehuna. Lahaksig remachlekes. You have to know that when someone starts such a machlekes, he is taking himself out of the kohol, out of the community. He is causing disunity. When you cause disunity in a place where there is unity, you are taking. But who are you taking? You're taking yourself out. Once you take yourself out of a kohol, be careful. It's a very dangerous step. Because it states that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is with the kohol, with the community, not with those that are out of it. This is what it means, Vayikach, that the Torah wrote Vayikach. Lokach es atzmai. He came to make division in Israel. Because there was one king. There was one king, Godel. There was one authority. He came to break that. He took himself away. Then why doesn't say Yaakov? Because what was taking place here was the greatest affront to Yaakov Avinu possible. The greatest affront, insult, rebellion against Yaakov Avinu. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu was known as Yaakov Ishtam. He is called Tamima. He is the one, Tamima means Sholem. He is the one that unified Israel. He unified the 12 Shvatim into one, the 12 sons. And here Korach was coming to make a disunity. This was the greatest blasphemy, affront to Yaakov. And therefore, it states, just looking for it here. Lehiskir ben Yaakov shebikesh rachamim al atzmai. Yaakov asked for rachmonus. Have mercy on me. Shelei yizoch shmei al machlekesom. Don't write my name in this parsha. Shenamar bakolam al techad kvedi. when they take a group out of Klal Yisrael to create a different group, a new faction, have rachamim, have rachmonos on me. Don't mention my name. Then Rashi brings by his children later on that they came back together, there it states Ben Yisrael, Ben Yaakov. Where do we see this by Yaakov? When Yaakov came in Parshas Vayetze, he was running away from Esav. And he went to sleep. And that's where he had the dream of the ladder going up and down. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu then came to him with all the promises of who he'll be. It states that he took me avne hamokom. He took from the places, the stones of the places, and he made them like a pillow and he went to sleep. In the morning it states that when he got up, they were one stone. The Medrash tells us, "Vayitze Parshas Samaches, Os Yud Gimel, Vayikach Me'avne Amokom, Rabbi Yehuda V'Rabbi Nechemya V'Rabbonim, Yuda Omar Yud Beis Avonim Notel." He took 12 stones. Omar Kach Gozer Hakadosh Baruch Hu Shumayim Yud Beis Shvatim. Hakadosh Baruch Hu has decreed that there will be 12 Shvatim, 12 tribes. Avraham le'amidon, Avraham didn't bring them out. Yitzchok le'amidon, and Yitzchok didn't make them. Ani imis achais hein yud beis avonim zulezu. If I will be successful in making from these 12 stones one stone, yodeani shani mamid yud beis shvatim. Then I know that I will be the one to bring out the 12 shvatim. In the morning, since it was one stone, kiven shisnachu yud beis avonim zulazu, yodashu ma'amid yud beis shvatim. He knew that from him will come the 12 shvatim. Kulam b'nei ish echod nochnu, they said. We are all from one father. There's other drushes also to show. Some say he took three or two to represent Avram Yitzchok. He was the third, but also he will make one out of them. Yaakov was the one who made Klal Yisrael into one. This is why also it states that when they came to build the Mishkan, the sanctuary in the desert, and Hashem said that you need atzei shittim, large pieces of wood that came from cedar trees. Sages asked, where did they find wood in the desert? It states, Yaakov Avinu brought saplings with him from Eretz Canaan. When he came down to Egypt, he planted them there and told his sons that when they go to the desert, they should cut them down and take them with them because they'll need the wood. Now, but they were going to need a lot of materials for the Mishkan, for the sanctuary. Why did Yaakov foresaw what they would need. So why didn't he foresee they would need so many things? What did he bring this down for and not other things also? The Maral answers, because Yaakov was most interested in this. Because the Atzei Shittim, these were for the walls of the Mishkan. And the walls of the Mishkan, it states that when the walls were put up, the Mishkan was one. This is what was me'ached the walls, unified the sanctuary. There's another medrash that states that the Briya HaTichon, that was what held all of the beams together, that is what he brought down. He was interested in the unification of the sanctuary. Yaakov was the Merkas. It was the central point to be ma'achet, to hold Israel into one. Whenever there is a disunity in Klal Yisrael, this breaks the greatness of Yaakov Avinu. And therefore he said, don't mention my name here. my name will not be here. There can be no greater affront. This is why, if we look in Pasuk, Zos Asu, Pasuk Vov, Moshe told the Korach and his group, Zos Asu, do this, Kehulachem Machtes. Take for yourself these utensils for the incense and the fire. You and your whole group. Rashi brings Maro Lemalehem Kach. Why did Moshe choose this? Omalehem, he said to them. Bedarkei Agoyim, when it comes to the nations of the world, Yesh Nimusim Harbe Vekomrim Harbe. When it comes to the nations of the world, you find that they're all split. They all have different religions. They all have many religions. They all have many idolatries, many priests. Mekulam ein miskaptsim bebayis echad. And they can all come to one Beis HaMikdash, to one place. Onu ein lonu el Hashem echad. We have only one God, Oren echad. Only one Oren HaKodesh, Torah achas. Only one Torah. Mizbeach echad. One altar. Kohen Godel Echod. Only one high priest. Vato Mosai Mechamish Mish Mevakshim Kul Den Gedola. And you 250 people, you all want each to be the Kohen Godel. Afani Reitze Bekach. I also want to. But we have only one. Take this, these utensils, but beware. This is what the Kohen Gadol uses, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will choose. The reason why he told them this is because you are coming to break the unity of Yisrael, the oneness of Yisrael. And you'll see, we represent Amcha Yisrael Goy Echod Ba'oretz. We have a oneness that no one else has. That's the greatness of Yisrael. You're coming to break it. You'll see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do. This is perhaps why we see that for this if we will look in Pasuk, in Pasuk Chof Zayin, it states, Vayeolu me'al mishkan keilak dosen v'avriro misoviv. Hashem said that everybody should stay away from their camp. So they went away from their camp. V'dosen v'avriro, Yotzu Nitzavim Pesach O'Aleihem, but Dosen Aviram was near their tents, Unishehem, their wives, Ubanehem, their sons, Betapom, and their infants. And all of these, it states that when the earth opened up, it swallowed everyone. Rashi says, Bo Ure'e Kamakosha Hamachlekes. Come and see how bad Machlekes is. Share bezdin shilmata ein einchin elach yovish desaris. The earthly courts cannot give a punishment unless someone has reached manhood or womanhood. Bezdin shilmalo ad esrim shono. The heavenly courts only give punishment to someone that's 20 years old. Mekan ovdu af yenke shadayim. And here, even the infants that were still nursing from their mothers were also swept into this, were destroyed. And then, perhaps this is the reason we see that the earth opened up. This was actually a split, not only amongst Israel. It was a split in the earth. It was a split in the creation. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the earth where it should be the home of the people. And here the earth was split open, where they went down alive to their graves to kill them. It was a split in the creation. And we have an inference on this. In Medrash Rabbah, at the creation of the world, in Parsha Dalet, Osches, and every day it said Ki Tov. The whole creation, you must know, had the earmark and the hallmark of Tov. And every day, with one exception, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, he looked at what he did, and it was Tov. On Tuesday, Ki Tov was said twice, because on Monday it wasn't said. At the end of all of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Vayares kol asher Hashem oso. Hashem looked at what everything he did, and it's Ki Tov. So an earmark of the creation was Tov, goodness. But on Monday, Tov wasn't said. Why not? Lama ink si b'sheni ki tov, the Medrash asks. Medrash gives three reasons. But Chanina says, shebay nivreis machlekes, because on that day there was a disunity in the world. What was the disunity? Who was fighting? There was no people were created yet. Vayhi mavdil bein mayim lamoyim. On that day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on Sunday, the waters were all unified from the earth to the heavens. On Monday, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a division in the waters, from the upper waters to the lower waters. So there was a division. Omer av tuvimi, im machlegeshi le tikkuna shalaylam, le yeshiva, ein bei kitay, machlegeshi le avuva, alachas kama vakama. Rav Tuvimi said, if a machlekes that is necessary and was for the good of the world, still HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't say tov on that day. It's a disunity. So when there's a disunity that's harmful for the world, that comes to destroy the world, how much more so? So we see that machlekes is a antithesis to the creation. And here there was machlekes, and the creation backed up. The earth split. Now, this is what we learn about this parsha. We went through the story as it unfolded in its simple sense. And we gave background to it, what was behind it. And then we went into it with greater depth, what we can learn from it. It's very relevant. Very relevant to our times. It's relevant to all times, but especially our times. In our times, we have a plague in the world, a disease. And the disease is division and disunity. We don't have to speak about the world in general. There we know there's disunity and division. It's supposed to be a united nations. The label means where it's united. And the greatest, this creates the greatest disunity in history. We don't have to speak about the nations of the world. Let's speak about the disunity in Israel. And when we speak about the disunity in Israel, we don't have to speak about the disunity between those who keep the Torah and those that don't keep the Torah. Those that don't keep the Torah have different names. They're the Reform, Conservative, Non-Affiliated, Secularist, Chilonim, whatever. And those that keep the Torah have other names. They're the Shemrei Torah, the Shemrei Mitzvahs, the Machne HaTorah, the Haredim, whatever. We don't have to speak about that. Let's just speak about the so-called Machne HaTorah, those that keep Torah, those that recognize that Torah is supreme, and they do their best to fulfill it. Today we have a world in this camp which is made up basically of factions, groups, movements, splintering ideologies, divisions, tinoos, machanos, you name it. It is so bad that it's gotten to a point, and it's holech umeisiv, gathers momentum all of the time. But it's so bad, it's gotten to the point, you know, a lie is when something is a little away from the truth. If it goes a long way from the truth, it becomes a bigger lie. But the worst type of lie is when people start to believe that this is the truth. And this is what it's gotten to. Where people sincerely will tell you, this is how it's supposed to be, this is how it always was, and this is how it should be. It's praiseworthy. It brings diversity, it brings variations. Why not? They'll even tell you there were 12 Shvatim, Yud Bei Shvatim, 12 brothers. Each one was different. Each tribe was different. Then also, they'll quote, why was it different than the Machlekes Bei Shama and Bei Silo? Historically. Or, it's Machlekes L'Shem Shamayim. States that a machlekes shalei l'shem shamayim, not in this for the sake of heaven, is no good, but this is all machlekes l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, to improve things. And also, if it's in the Machne HaTorah, all right, if it's with the Chilonim, that's a different thing. If there's different machlekes in, but this is in the Machne HaTorah. Firstly, you have to understand that the machlekes of Korach v'Adosai, which we see, Allah Kodesh Baruch Hu looked at it, and we see what happened to them. That was a machlekes between Shemrei Torah. That was a machlekes between Haredim at its best. And if you would have asked any one of them, they would have told you it's a machlekes l'shem shamayim. You're not going to get 250 heads of Sanhedrin, heads of court, to tell them that they realize that this is a machlekes not in the sake of heaven, but we're still going for it. Secondly, the Gemara tells us, when it comes to the machlekes beisilun beishamai, the Gemara tells us, le nisrabe machlekes beYisrael, machlekes came to Yisrael, at shele shimshu talmide beishamai o beisil kol tzochai. When these disciples of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel started to fall in their level of learning, when they started to leave the yeshivas before they were ripe, And the Rambam brings Heima Hashu'olim Aktanim Shemachablim Kerem Hashem. He's borrowing a phrase from Shlema Melech Shir HaShirim. These are the small foxes that go and destroy the gardens and the vineyards of Hashem. When there was, when Shammai and Hillel lived, and they had great Talmidim, there was a Machlekes and Halacha, but there was not personal Machlekes. They both had the greatest, greatest honor. All the factions had the greatest honor for each other. And they mixed and they intermingled and they did whatever they could possible to unite Klal Yisrael. The fact is, there was one case where a certain woman, because it had to do with a Yibum, had to do with the person dies and he leaves a widow and with no children, and then there's the brother-in-law, had to do with this, where Beis Hillel held that she's permissible to be married to under certain circumstances, and Beis Shammai held she's not. Nevertheless, Beis Shammai would not abstain in order not to divide Yisrael, even though they held this was an Issur Koresh. And the Gemara tells us, Hillel, whenever anyone asked him, what is the halacha? He didn't shout out and say, this is the halacha, and if you don't keep this, we'll put you in cheirem. He said, the halacha, there are two opinions. This is what he told the people. And the Gemara says further, not only did he tell them there are two opinions, and what the two opinions are, but he would say over Shammai's opinion first. He would say, Shammai holds this opinion, and I hold this opinion. And there's a Gemara, the Machlekes, the division in Yisrael started because of the Talmidim Ketanim, the small foxes. The Gemara brings in Masechta Brachos, Daf Yud Aleph, the Mishnah. Mishnah Daf Yud, Amud Beis. Beshama Emrim Be'erev Kol Odom Yate V'Yikro. Of Abeka Yamed. Beshamai says that when you say the Shema at night, you're supposed to sit down and say it. Because it states Uveshach Becha, when you lay down, that's referring to the Shema at night. Uvekumechon, when you get up, it's referring to the Shema in the morning. Therefore he said, in the morning you must stand up, and in the night you must recline. Beis Hillel says, no, it's not necessary. Means something else. Omer of Tarfin. Ani Yisi Baba Derech. Tarfin says, Tarfin was a very, very great individual. He was a colleague at a Bekiba. He said, I was walking on a journey. It's coming evening. I said the Shema. V'itesi, likreis. And I sat down to say it. Kedivrei Beis Shammai. Because I figured like this. To sit down, then you fulfill everybody's opinion. Because Beis Hillel said, he didn't say you have to stand up. He said you could say it whichever way you want. Well, if I stand up, I'm only fulfilling Beis Shammai's opinion, Beis Hillel's and not Beis Shammai's. Therefore, I figured it's better to sit down and fulfill everyone's opinion. V'sokanti bi'atzmi, and I brought myself into danger. Mivnei alistim, while I went off the side of the road, and I sat down, I was jumped by a few thugs. Amrullah, he told over the story. He says, they almost killed me. He told over the story when he came back to the Chachomim. You know what they told him? G'day ha-yisa l'chev be'atzmecha. You think, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you weren't killed because you deserve to be killed. Shavata adivre be'silo. Because you transgressed the words of Basila. But how did you transgress the words of Basila? Basila says you could say it any way you want. Mesina Shishorim says on this, at the end of Perechof, in Mishkol HaChasidus, he says, why did he transgress? What did he do wrong? He was machmir. He went more than the deen required, and that way he could fulfill every opinion. He says, because esho inyan machlekes beishame beisilo inyan kovid in Israel. Because at this time already the machlekes deteriorated because of the small foxes. And it became an enormous problem in Israel. And finally they had to call for a baskol. But the baskol came down to say that the halacha should be like Beisilo. Torah has to be one Torah. The Baskol was coming to tell us, make the Torah, one way. Reb Tarfon should have strengthened that. He should have gone out of his way to stand up and say the Shema. To show that the Halacha is not like Beis Shammai. Not go out of his way to sit in order to fulfill Beis Shammai also. This is chumra. This is chasidus. If you want to be a chosid, that's what you should do. Be a chosid to minimize the machlekes in Israel, the division. Not to be a chosid to make more division. That's why they said, you should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu you're alive today. Because you deserve to be killed. Someone like you doing that. People will see him, or they'll hear about it, so they'll do it also. We'll have two terrors in Israel. This is what the Masechta Shishorim says on this. So people say, either was Machlekes Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai. Ais L'Shem Shemaim. In the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, I had a friend, a senior friend, an elder friend, I hope he's still living. His name was Rav Rothberg, I believe Rav David Rothberg. He had learnt in the Meir Yeshiva in Europe. His father was a Talmud by the Chofetz Chaim, Reb Tuvia Rothberg, and he later became the Rav of a town in Lithuania, Bluna. So he showed me in the Kisvei, called Kisvei Chofetz Chaim, a story which the Chofetz Chaim son, Prince here, which was told over to him by this Reb Tuvia Rothberg. If you're interested, it's in the Chelek called Dugma Mesichas Ovizal, Daf Pei. He writes as follows, the son. Pam Islakho Machlekes B'Yeshiva. In Yeshiva Naran, there came out to be a great machlekes. Al das mashkiach ha-yeshiva Rav Reb Yud. He doesn't mention who the mashkiach was, but Reb Rothberg told me that the Mashkiach was Rabbi Yerucham. Rabbi Yerucham later on went to become the Mashkiach in Mir. He was, but he was a Mashkiach in the Raden first, and he was from the Musa, the Bali Musa. And at that time, the Musar movement was taking hold, and it was those who were for it, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the others, those who were for it, their intention was is to bring back many, many principles of the Torah that were becoming too relaxed and too forgotten. They were merely emphasizing what always was emphasized, but it was becoming lost. Those who were against it looked at it as a tenua chadosho, a new movement. And new movements were very, very dangerous. We know what new movements were. We've had plenty. Yoshka was a new movement. We've had plenty in history. So you had here, this swept through Lithuania. And it became very serious. And you had great machlekes. And it was machlekes l'shem shemai. So one time this machlekes broke out in Raden, in the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva. Chatzi b'nei yeshiva yaltzi doi v'chatzi asheni siznagdalei. Half of the yeshiva took his side, this mashkiach, and half were against him. Finally, the Lomdi Magdalim, he had a kollel that was learning kochim of senior talmidim. They came and they asked him, please resolve this machlekes. We can't have a machlekes like this in the yeshiva. And the Rav Tuvia b'neihem, this Rav Tuvia that told him over the story, he was from this group. So what they decided, that they would make a bezedin. And from the senior talmidim, they would make a bezedin. And they would listen to the tainas of both sides. Both sides would represent, would delegate someone to speak on their behalf. And they'll listen to the tainas of both sides. And they will paskin. They'll give a decision which way, what should be done. The menahel of the yeshiva, Reb Tzvi, who was the brother-in-law to the son that's writing this, the son of the Chofetz Chaim, Helim Zeis Mi Abba. He concealed this from my father, the Chofetz Chaim. He was an old man, he didn't want him to have the aggravation and so forth, so he concealed it. On the Nachakach Neidelei. But later on he found out about it. V'nish Baruchai Mi'od. And he became very, very broken from it. V'nich Nesala Yeshiva. And immediately he came into the yeshiva, v'dorash kishnei shous, and he darshan for 2 hours, al oven machlekes b'mimiriris nefesh, on the avera of machlekes, of causing division, of disunity, fragmentation, with bitterness. He writes here what he remembers, what he said, which we haven't time to go in now. But what he did say, he says, Machlekes brings Loshon Hara. Loshon Hara, there's a Tesefta that the Rambam brings Lahalocha. Kat Mesapre Loshon Hara, Ein Lam Chelek Leilam Abo. Those that speak Loshon Hara lose their Chelek in Leilam Abo. So he said like this. He says, once the Chofetz Chaim found out about it, so the different sides ran to him right away, hoping to get them on their side, before the other side gets them on their side. So he said as this. Ma atem choshvim. What do you think? Ki etstarif gam anechi lechaburosim? That I will join in one of the sides. Di'u, you should know. Kim kol chivivaisai lelem de Torah. With all of my love for yeshivas and learning of Torah, Ani Eim Elohim, I say to you, Mutav Li, it is far better, Sheyovdu Afilu Shivim Yeshivas. It's far better that 70 yeshivas should be closed. Mishikonis Bechaburas Katpa Leiloshen Hora, that I should get involved in this Machlekes. Beholachle. And then he walked out. He says, better close 70 yeshivas than to let this machlekes carry on. He walked out. Now this is Shem Shemayim, Machne HaTorah. In the Me'idach Yisef, from the other aspect, in Parshas Nosei, which we just learned, I heard this on a tape. I have a tape that goes back to 1985 about them. It was a Siyum HaShasin convention of Agudas Yisrael. It's basically in Yiddish. The gifter there is the keynote speaker. But there's a Rav Lawrence. First of all the speakers, this was the Daf Yomi, Yasiyum HaShas, all of them were rebuking everyone, time after time, on this principle of the fragmentation, the division, the dissension in Yisrael, that this is Churban. This is why we went into Golos, and this is why we're still in Golos. But there was a Rav Lawrence that spoke. He was a member of the parliament for Agudas Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. He spoke, and he quoted a Sifona. The Sifona asked a good question. It states, we mentioned before, it says that the Nesi'im brought gifts for the new Mishkan. What did it bring? So it says, Sheish Eglei Sof, the 12 Nesi'im, brought 6 covered wagons, Ushnei Osa Bokor, and 12 oxen. Agola Aushnei Anesi'im, Vishole Echod. They brought 6 covered wagons, 12 oxen, 2 oxen for each wagon. Each one donated 1 ox. There were 12 oxes. And on the covered wagons, 2 donated 1 wagon. 1 wagon was donated by 2 Nesi'im. So there were, from the 12 Nesi'im, of the 12 Shvatim, 6 covered wagons and 12 oxen. He asked me, so yes, a good question. We can understand each one donated an ox. Why couldn't each one donate a wagon? The Nesi'im were wealthy. What did they have to chip in together to buy a wagon and partnership? 6 wagons. Let them donate 12 wagons. The Sifona asks it. And the Sifona says as follows. La'ais achva b'nehem. Now, they did this specifically to show brotherhood. Asher bo yoruim shetish shechina. Why did they want to show brotherhood, and especially at this time? Because what was the purpose of the Mishkan? The purpose of the Mishkan is vosli Mishkan v'shochanti b'seichom, that I may dwell amongst you. Shechina. It states that when is there Shechina? Ki omru vayhi b'shurun melech b'yisasei v'roshei am yachad. When will there be a melech in Yeshurun in Israel? When will there be a Kodesh Baruch Hu in Israel? When the heads of the nations dwell together. B'yisasei v'roshei am yachad. The heads of the nations dwell together, then all the followers will dwell together. Now, they were the heads of the nation. And now they wanted Shechina. They said, no, we can't. We can't give each one our own wagon and our own ox. That's too independent. That's too divisive. We will both give one wagon together. And when these wagons were used to carry the Mishkan, when the Mishkan will be carried, so it'll be a shoot of a partnership, a togetherness. Al hepech, Cholak libo matu yeshomu states that when Ephraim went and worshipped idolatry, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I can't do anything against them because they all live together with love and brotherhood. But once there was fighting in between them, now he says, now I can do. This is what the Sifona says. And actually, there's a Chofetz Chaim that asks another question. When they came to the dedication, it states each one brought their gifts, their other gifts. They brought a gold cup, silver plate, and so forth and so on. And the Torah goes through each one, and everyone exactly the same. If everyone is exactly the same, why did the Torah have to go through each one 12 times? It should bring the first one and say, V'chein kulam, and so did everyone bring. So the Medrash answers that. The Medrash says that each gift was the same, but each one had different intentions for it. For example, Yehuda, who was from him Malchus, he had in mind kingship. And Yisachar was Torah, he had in mind Torah. Zebulun was the support of Torah, this is what he had in mind. Okay, so it had to write it 12 times. But the Chofetz Chaim has something else. If each one had different kavanos, different intentions, so why didn't each one bring different gifts? If one person has an intention for this, so he does that. Someone has a different intention, he does something else. Why were all the gifts unified? He says, because there shouldn't be a chiluk levavos. There shouldn't be a division between the two. In other words, everyone davens the same. You can have different intentions, but everyone davens the same. Everyone does the same mitzvahs. You can have different intentions, but that doesn't divide the people. Therefore, everyone physically brought all of the same gifts. As far as your thoughts or your intentions, that was each one in accordance to his specific duty or task or character or personality. This is what the Chofetz Chaim brings. This that people say that this is how it always was, that's a sheker, it's a lie. Look, we always had problems. We're in Golos because of that, because of the Sinus Chinam and Chiluk Deos. But never to this degree, it's coming to the point of a plague of disease. The fact is, in Lithuania, I once asked a person who learned in TELS, came out of Rov, then in America, I said, why over here in South Africa? South Africa is blessed with perhaps almost the only unified community left in the world, unified Jewish community. Why over here, basically everyone is under the Orthodox umbrella? You don't find a religious movement under a different umbrella than Orthodoxy. There's no conservative Judaism. Reform is insignificant. He told me because in Lithuania there was that way. And here basically they've come from Lithuania. There's no conservative reform. I said, what do you mean Lithuania? He says in Lithuania there was only one religious movement. Only one religious movement. I told him, but there were other movements. Not religious movements. There was only one way, one religious movement, basically. Ruba Kakulai, almost all. One religious movement, and therefore you could take it or leave it. You wanted to go to shul, there was one kind of shul. There were plenty of Jews in Lithuania who didn't want to go to shul. So they didn't go make their own shul. They just didn't go to shul. There were other movements. There was a communist movement. They had Jews involved and in the forefront, Jewish youth. There was a socialist movement. There was a Bund movement, which was anti-Israel. There was a Haskalah. the maskilim, the scholar, they weren't trying to change Torah, to change mitzvahs. They were just saying that their head is for the Torah, the mitzvahs. They were saying that together with it, you have to add some more cultures. So therefore, to create another religious movement, that's something that the people, when they came here from Lithuania, they weren't used to. Therefore, it was never a good seller. Now, and even then you should know, even these secular movements that were in Lithuania, you should know the people in the Gedalim went out of their way to try to be inclusive, to include them in the community. There are stories abound from Reb Chaim Volozhiner and his son Reb Yitzchak Volozhiner. When the Haskalah was taking hot roots, that's why he made Volozhiner Yeshiva. He would befriend the greatest maskilim to try to be inclusive of them, to bring them in to become part of the community. Reb Chaim Ozer, there's a story, was the Rav of Vilna. In Vilna there was a university. Those that went to university in Lithuania were those that had left Yiddishkeit. Very seldom did you find someone who was a Torah-abiding Jew going to a university in Vilna. Chaim Ozer once called in a professor. He sent a message, he wants to see the professor from the university. It was a Jewish professor. Professor was running. The Rav of Vilna wants to see me. He was the antithesis. He called him in and he gave him a whole package of money. He says, Pesach is coming. You have poor students. Give it to the poor students so they should be able to buy matzah for Pesach. He says, are you worried about the students in university? At that time, university in Lithuania. He says, I'm worried about every Jew. I want every Jew to be able to keep mitzvahs. And he was so impressed with Reb Chaim Ozer. I knew a Jew here who told me that he lived in Kovna and he went to gymnasium. Kovna was already more of a modern city. And then at gymnasium already was like a university. So we started to talk about the Kovna Rav, and that was the great Rabbi Avram Gana Shapiro. Kovna was one of the greatest rabbinical positions in the world. The previous Kovna Rav was Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, the one before him. So you could imagine how great Rabbi Avram Gana Shapiro was. In Lithuania, a village had 18 or 20 candidates to become the Rav, because they had so many Rabbonim. So you can imagine how many candidates and who they took in Kovna. So we started to talk about him. So he tells me, I knew him, I was in his home. So I look at him. Here's someone in the gymnasia. Those that were in the gymnasia, these were the movements, these were the communists, the socialists, the whatnot. He's in the gymnasium and he tells me he's in the Kovna Rav's home and he knew him. I said, what are you doing in his home? Oh, he says he would invite groups of students often to his house to have discussions with them. They would try to include everyone. Nobody was out of the Kihila unless he didn't want, under no circumstance would he agree to it. The same thing the great Ramothkai Pogromansky, who was known as the genius of Lithuania, he would hold discussion groups with communists, Jewish youth communists, regular discussion groups with them, in order to try to include them. The Chofetz Chaim would go, there was a story where he went to Reb Chaim Ozer, and he says, we have to make, in all of Lithuania, a national Lakito. Chaim Ozer says, we have so many demands. He says, we have to, because there are many Jewish youth today that have gone into the army, and they can't get kosher. to raise money so they can get kosher. He was speaking about all of the Jewish youth. Their concern was to everyone should be included. Cholila, that they should be lost or divided from Israel. This was Lithuania. Poland was perhaps the largest Jewish community in Europe. Before the war days, probably had 3.5, maybe even 4 million Jews. Poland was, I don't know for sure, but there's a likelihood it was predominantly Hasidim. The big Hasidic movement in Poland was Gier. Warsaw and other places. Gier was a suburb outside of Warsaw. They could have had 100,000, 200,000 Hasidim. But they had many, many Hasidic groups all over Poland. You should know that what we're saying about Lithuania was true in Poland also, in its own situation. There's a book, I've mentioned it a few times, that has come out recently. It was written in Hebrew, Einaim Lires, and then by Reb Yontif Schwartz. Should be well. And then it was translated by his son into English. He was a Rav in Poland. He was from Poland. He's not a Litvak. He, and probably Hasidic background. He went to Chachme Lublin, which was one of the great yeshivas of Poland. Meir Shapiro, that was the one who created the Daf Yomi. He came from the city of Auschwitz. He was in his teens, 17, 18 years old during the war, and he survived the war through the camps. Came to New York. He's a Rav in New York for many, many years, an old man today in his 80s. An enormous Talmud Chacham. He wrote a book where he says that things are going on today in the Jewish world. He's talking about the Torah world, that they think that's how it should be and never existed in Israel before. He says the door is completely cut off from what was before. He says the reason is, he says this is a generation that's like, what happens if you have children that grow up without a father? They don't know how to act. He says, our generation is a generation that grew up without fathers. Because the fathers were annihilated during the time of the Holocaust. He says, the pre-Holocaust values of Klal Yisrael have become lost. Yes, you have the physical exercises, the physical manifestations, but it's not the pre-Holocaust values. And he writes a big book on this. And I can tell you, it's a very, very great Talmud Chacham. Now, we don't have time to mention what he writes here, but in his foreword, what he starts with, he writes a foreword. And I'll read you the titles of the foreword. The Unique Importance and Benefits of Unity in Our Generation. Chapter 1, Unity and Love of Fellow Jews Can Naturally Save the Jewish People in Their Time of Danger. Chapter 2, Unity and Brotherly Love is the Primary Duty of the Post-Holocaust Generation. Chapter 3, Factional Cheders and Girls' Schools Increase Divisiveness and Vain Hatred. Chapter 4, A Splintered Educational System Also Violates the Prohibition of Leitis Godedu, where a Jewish community is supposed to be unified. Chapter 5, Choosing a Yeshiva Strictly on the Basis of One's Affiliation Undermines Torah Scholarships. Here he brings in something interesting, because he writes there that even though there were many, many different Hasidic groups in Poland, but when it came to yeshiva, you could find from every group there. Because they sent their son to whatever yeshiva that was of the highest academic standard that they felt was proper for their son. when I came, tells in Europe had Talmidim from all over. The German Talmidim, English, South African, Hungarian, all over. Because they wanted Torah, the father sent them there. When I came to Telz, there were Talmidim from all factions. He says, today, no. It's affiliation. He says, Lahavdil, you want a doctorate in mathematics. You'll try to find a university that teaches the best mathematics. Want a medical degree. You try to go to Harvard. Want a law degree. If you can get into Yale, it's known to be the best law university. Today, everything's affiliation. If it's your camp, you'll go to it. If it's not your camp, you won't. He says, this was never heard of in Klal Yisrael before. He says, no wonder we don't have Gedalim today. And he cries and cries on it. Now, he's not talking about Lithuania. He's not talking about South Africa. He is talking, he comes from Poland, and he's talking what's going on overseas. We, Baruch Hashem, we live in a community, as mentioned, which is one of the few unified communities left in the world, if not the only one. We have one Beis Din, one standard for Kashrus, for Shechita, all under the Beis Din. One standard for Gerus and Gittin and Kiddushin and so forth and so on. And this brings a unified system of Torah to the whole community. But you should know, it's been challenged, and it's been challenged all of the time. Not from within, from without. People come with other ideas, and they create groups here, and then they try to overthrow the authority. This is Korach Va'Adosai. Exactly, Korach Va'Adosai. And already inroads have been made. And this is something that should be resisted aggressively and forcibly. Kol mi sheyochel limchais, whoever can do something about it is obligated to do something about it. When we were in St. Louis, there was a unified kehillah. It's a great Rav, Rav Menachem Tzvi Eichenstein, Zichrono Livracha. But wasn't this, there the Orthodox community is very small because Orthodoxy is only 10% of the population. It's 90% that belong to other, to conservative reform and other, but the Orthodox community was unified. It was one of the only places in America. We once had an issue, and we wrote to Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter wrote back as follows. He said, "Here, St. Louis, he ulai ha'ira yechida b'menidas America, shenisha ba'otzuras killa. The city of St. Louis is perhaps the only city left in America that there remained a formation of what was known as a kehila, like in Europe. Lachin yeshlish mor alzeh mi'od mi'od." Therefore, guard it very, very carefully. I'll give you one example. It's getting late. We have to come to a close. But I'll give you one example. You know, I always said, generally, there were a few isolated exceptions, but they were very, very isolated. But the Ruba Kekula, when it came to a shul, what was a shul? A shul was a shul. You came there, you davened. You could learn. It had a chevra, had a rav. A shul was a shul. What distinguished one shul from another? Besides the chazan, geography. Those went to shul in one place because it was there in their neighborhood. Someone went to a shul in another place because it was their neighborhood. Some would go to a shul outside of their neighborhood because their fathers went there. But why did their fathers go there? Because then it was in their neighborhood. Geography. This is what I always knew. And it's very, very interesting. It states, Hashem Meira Ala Etzem. name tells you the essence. Every shul that I knew of in America always had a name. They always gave themselves a name. In my town, there was one called Shari Tzedek, Mikro Kodesh, Knesset Yisrael, Avas Achim. I imagine that all, if not most, of the shuls in Johannesburg also have names. They were given names. Yet how are they known? The Beis HaMedrash HaGadol was called the Dornhunshin Shul. The Great Synagogue was called the Wolmerman Shul. The one in Berea was called the Berea Shul. The big one in Yovel was called the Yovel Shul. The one in Oxford was called the Oxford Shul. The Cyril Dean Shul, the Observatory Shul, the Sydenham Shul. Even the Beis HaMedrash HaGadol has moved to Santon now. If you didn't know, they took over the shul from the Beis HaMedrash. It's called the Santon Shul. What's their names? Unless they don't have a name. But I'm sure some of them must have names. So that's the answer. It's geography. He went to the Berea Shul because he lived in Berea. Or his father went to the Berea Shul. He went to the Oxford Shul because he lived in the Oxford Shul. But that was what distinguished one shul from another. Well, not that it was a different way, a different movement, a different camp. If you examine, and this is the trend that's coming over the world, so many places today in Johannesburg that are not known by the geography anymore, but they represent a movement, an organization, a tenuah. I used to tell the Talmidim, the early days, Ben Azmanim, they would say, you know, they went to this place and people gave them a hard time, why don't you keep Arder? Went to another place, why don't you keep Arder? Another place, why don't you keep Arway? I said, because you're not going to a shul, you're going to a movement, whatever the movement might be. Go to a shul. I says, if you go to a shul, you know what they'll tell you? Thank you for coming. Will you come tomorrow morning and help us with the minyan also? And that's what they did. They went in. That's what they told them. This is an example of what we're talking about. There might come a time when a shul, heaven forbid, a shul will become extinct. There won't be any more a shul known on the neighborhood. It'll be known by a name of a movement. This is where Klal Yisrael is coming to. This is what we can learn from this parsha of Kerach Va'adosai.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.